Hi, you're listening to Goats Notes with your host, I'm Jay.
And my name is Zipporah.
This is your decolonized vegan podcast.
If you like this episode, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to another episode, y'all.
Welcome!
So we thought that we would start off the episode by reading two reviews that we received. One from Apple Podcasts and the other was...
From a rooster.
You're not... I didn't want you to spoil it. I wanted to be like a...
Okay, delete it. Why?
No,
they probably don't even know what a rooster's code for.
Oh, yeah. They definitely don't know. So, I'm such a bad liar. That's terrible. Okay, so let's do the first review from Apple Podcasts. So, this is coming to us from one of our listeners. So, the review title is amazing. And the review is, I love J and Z so much. Listening is like hanging with my friends. The best energy.
Who said that?
You know, I don't want to put business out there, but...
What's their handle? What's their user?
I'm not reading out their
username. What's their user handle?
You could go on Apple Podcasts and figure that out yourself, right?
We want to empower you to do the work yourself.
Exactly.
What's the review?
I'm just protecting the identity of the person in question, y'all. I'm not trying to be like fastidious or whatever. You have the other review?
I have. I just pulled it up.
Okay, great.
So the other review comes to us from Rooster. Yeah. Actually that's code for chicken.
Yep.
So a few weeks ago, I was transporting a young rooster, but they sent me an image of a chicken. Anyway, transporting a young rooster to sanctuary, and it was a bit of a drive, and he was pretty quiet, but I put on Goats Notes, and as soon as he heard your laugh, he started making little peeping noises. Every time you would laugh, he would peep along. He loved your laugh! I thought this was cute. I'm sending a pic of the rooster. His name is Chico. And then I got an image of a chicken.
It's a young rooster, so maybe it doesn't really show as like a rooster proper.
Yeah, for me, what I'm going to take from this is that there are animals that are out here that would be listeners if they had access to Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Absolutely. And I know that they would probably leave a review.
And they would support.
Yeah.
That would be like a buck buck here.
Yeah.
Buck buck there. Yeah. There buck there buck. Everywhere buck buck. That was.
As you can see, it's, you know, it's classic antics over here.
Did you ever read the book when you were growing up called Tic Tac Talk?
No.
Or Click Clack Clue, the cow goes moo?
I don't think so.
It was like a kid's book.
Okay.
Okay. Did you ever read the book about the rainbow fish?
Yeah. There's a game about that too, right?
A game?
Yeah.
About the rainbow fish?
Yeah.
There's only new the
I thought so.
There's also a TV show.
Maybe I was... maybe that's what I meant. I don't know.
Anyway. Speaking of fish.
I'm just trying to do those segues. Like,
that was good. Have you ever had a pet fish?
I have not had a pet fish.
Never in your life?
No.
I'm not even a little goldfish here.
No.
A fighting fish there.
No.
Koi fish? No. Okay. No fish.
No fishes.
No fishes. Actually, the plural of fish is fishes. Did you know that?
I'm not going to say that.
But it is.
Okay. All right. This episode is about pets.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to... Don't ruin the surprise. No, like, people, I feel like, should know.
Pets!
Meow, meow! Yeah, by far, a question that I get... very often, right? What are your thoughts on pets?
I get this question.
I don't know if I had that same interest about that topic when I first went vegan, because to me it wasn't... Okay, so one thing about these like controversial vegan like topics is that like this? Who finds them controversial, right?
Yeah.
It's always like every single time, almost, it's always a white vegan.
Someone who's not vegan.
Or someone who's not vegan, exactly trying to poke holes within veganism.
Like, there are many holes in the universe.
Of course, there's absolutely.
Holes in everything. Girl, do you know where we live?
It's not like a perfect sort of like reality, and I find that like...
people, that part.
Yeah, I feel like people just don't under, because we're, anyway, so.
People are like, well, this doesn't answer everything for me. I'm like, but yeah, it answers a good chunk.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes it's okay to not have the last word or the last say in every discussion or every topic. No, mm-hmm. Like maybe for you personally, because we all know how we personally feel about a given practice, right?
Yeah.
Like you could be a vegan that's like, fuck that. Like pets, I do not, I would never be one to have a pet that does not jive with me.
Yeah.
And that's like, great. That's great for you. But then when you go outside of that and be like, oh, well, no one should have pets. Now you're taking it to a level that I feel like is very unnecessary.
We're gonna have to have a discussion. We're gonna have to talk about, because there are so many things, especially when people start to be like around the conversation around pets, when they're being like, oh, this or that, or this means that you're not this, or this means you're not vegan, or this is why you shouldn't have this. And I'm like, y'all want to have discussions about animals and have no, you don't have the range.
Yeah,
you cannot, like, how are you gonna even bring up pets? How are you gonna bring up companionship, right? And we're, I'll be like, okay, so let's talk about domestication. Let's talk about the difference between taming and domesticating. Like, we'll go into this maybe a little bit later in the episode, but there are like things around the conversation around pets, around behavioral change, around how modification happens both at the behavioral level and the genetic level for human use. And it's like people don't clock that there is a the ways in this is also faceted and like just very much practiced throughout history and the planet. It's like, again, not a justification, but you have to be willing to like understand all of the different aspects that are informing the story, because you can't just be like, oh yeah, you can't have pets, but then you're like, oh, horses run free. Well, I'm like, well, if you live in North America, all horses are low-key domesticated, because every single horse here is a offshoot of the Spaniard Mustangs that were brought over during the Spanish Inquisition, well, sorry, during colonization. So it's like, y'all, and there are some offshoot like populations that come from like Russian breeds or whatever, but for the most part, it's like all horses, there are no wild horses in North America. So people can't, like, you can't have these like conversations around, well, what's pets, what's domestication, what's da da da. I'm like, then you have to, let's go into the nuance, baby. Because what, like, if you're gonna be like, well, no, all horse stables are shut down. Are they like, what, like, where do these animals go? How do you ship them then to their original country? No. Like, how, like, again, where do these all...
That actually brings up a really interesting...
It brings a lot of things. It brings up a lot of things. And it's like, if you want to go down this rabbit hole, I'm happy to go with you. But oftentimes you're bringing up pets, 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 because you want to have some sort of conversation where there's no range. And I'm always just like,
it's
so
frustrated. It's not even like you want to have a conversation. I mean, yes, but I think it's like you want to be able to police someone else's behavior. Like, you want to be able to be the authority on someone and have like the moral high ground. Like, be like, and it just doesn't.
And I'm like, baby,
it doesn't do much for
it's
me.
It's so messy. Yeah. So let's get into that.
Yeah.
So let's start off with our own experiences. So you were, you used to be known around the block as Slimezilla Patrilla. Patricia Quilla, no? You're like, absolutely not. So that was me trying to make a segue into snails.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that could have just been ass. Like, so yeah, so I grew up not having really pets. My mom was not a fan. I'm from the Caribbean. And so my parents grew up, like, if they did have like dogs and stuff, they were outside. Like, there was no such thing as like having pets or like what have you. Like,
animals.
Yeah. Like, inside
let's
the
start,
house.
Yeah.
Let's use companion animal, because that's like the context
of something that we're.
But yeah, my dad always wanted to have a dog. And one of my uncles, like, his daughter, well, my cousin, I don't know why I said it like that, she is like a huge animal lover, still not vegan though, which I'm like, girl, we gotta get that a little bit more straightened out, but out. Hey, it is what it is. But yeah, she's like a huge animal lover and had a few dogs, and one of her dogs had a kid, and we took that dog in, and that was Corey. I mean, he's still alive.
Parkour.
Yeah, a little Riri.
Oh, yeah, you're like, what?
I was
like,
yeah, no, he's like alive and well. He lives with my sister in Montreal. But yeah, we were, I guess, like, I lived with, that was like the pet that I guess had for a few years.
Lived with,
because I didn't own Corey, right? That's the other thing too. Like, they're exactly, he was a companion animal. So yeah, that was like that experience. And then when I was younger, I me and my neighbors, oh my gosh, we would go outside and like collect snails and put them in like Tropicana, like juice tins or whatever, like the plastic bottles. And we would like force them to mate together because we learned that they were
snails.
Yeah, we learned that they were, I don't know if they were intersex or if they had like both reproductive systems or what have you.
I don't know enough about mollusks. That's a whole branch of animals I've yet to learn about.
I'm pretty sure we had like found that out. And so we were just like rub them against one another in the hopes that they would like procreate or have children. And they did, which I was just like, was I a snail breeder? I was. And yeah, they didn't fare too well though. Like we really just like did not do a good job of taking care of them. We didn't do a lot of research. I was like, I don't know, 8, 9 years old or something like that. But I wouldn't really have considered them to be, I don't know, pets. And yeah, that's, I would say like my only experience with that.
Was with the snails.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch them lay eggs?
I didn't watch it, but I remember there were like a few eggs here and there, like in the grass that we had. Because we were forcing all of them. Like, we were like, y'all, this is a, like, it was this weird thing that we were doing. So, yeah, we did see a few eggs. We did see, like, a few baby snails. And then one time.
You did see a few eggs?
Mm-hmm.
That's so nuts. Yeah, snail birth sounds so, out of my realm.
Yeah. Oh my but God. It was like.
And it's like, it's like little bubbles, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, come out their body.
Oh, I didn't see it, like, happening.
Oh, you didn't see the
but
birthing.
We would see the, like, the little, like, the circles. The clumps? Yeah.
Was it, like, a bunch of eggs in one place?
No, there would be a few. There was, like, one little, really small one in, like, a corner of grass. But we didn't, like, dissect the whole thing because, again, it was, like, in a jug. So it's, like, we had the grass at the bottom. So we might have seen, like, the top little egg there. There might have been more, but we, like.
Underneath.
Yeah.
They usually, like, bloop, 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 bloop.
Oh, do a few.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's because we had, like, forced this onto them. It wasn't, like, a natural occurring thing. So maybe they didn't actually, like, procreate the way that they would naturally. I don't know.
I feel like they would. Do you know the Nice Boulder on Instagram?
No.
She is, like, a. Like, that's all she does is, like, find bugs in her community and, like just help them out if they're injured or, like, share information about them. And I'm just, like, I've learned so much from her. So, if y'all, check them out, the Nice Boulder. But they shared a video of snail birthing, and I was, like, oh, my gosh.
Oh.
I would love to have seen that IRL. So, I was, like, very curious when you were, like,
no,
nice to have snails.
I mean, yeah, for, like, a few weeks. But yeah, that's my experience with pets. What's yours? Ew. Oh my God. Ew.
I know.
Ew. That's disgusting. I don't want to see that. Sorry.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. These were your babies. Your literal. These are your children.
See, this is why I should not have ever been allowed to have snails.
As soon as they go to have children, you said disgusting. You said you filthy animals.
Did I say that? I don't think I said that. I did say something akin to that, though. Pretty much equivalent, yeah.
Okay, so snails were your only pet. And then Corey.
And then Corey, yeah.
Because I feel like socially we're like, okay, so pets are animals that we live with. But I feel like that is still such a muddy definition because it's like people live with horses, but they wouldn't consider a horse their pet, right? So then there are companion animals, right, that we have. Like people live with cows that are like, so they're animals that are domesticated, right?
Yeah.
So those include pets. Those are your dogs, your cats. Well, actually cats are completely separate. We'll talk about that later. Those are your dogs. Yeah, they are. Your dogs, okay. They are your horses. They are your cows. They are your sheep, right? These are the typically domesticated animals, not to mention there are domesticated plants as well, i.e. corn. A lot of plants that we grow here. Anyway, so domestication is a process, right? That changes in animals' behavior or beings' behavior and physiology for human use, right? So that's domestication.
Yeah.
Pets fall under that, but we need to be specific because there are people who have pets because they want to own an animal, again, for that human use. There are people who have pets for companionship, right? Again, it's another form of human use, but we have to make that distinction.
How would you feel your relationship with Kita? How would you define
I would consider that? It under companionship, but I wouldn't consider it under the umbrella of domestication because cats haven't technically been domesticated.
Would you have taken Kita in if Kita was a dog?
Probably not.
What?
That's why I don't have a dog. Because the idea of owning a dog. Yeah.
So you found, okay, so for context, Jay found Kita in the streets of Ontario.
Yes.
And
Ontario, like the entire province.
And took him in when he was a baby.
Yes.
And you're saying that had Kita been a dog, right? Let's say there was a dog instead of a cat playing there. You would have said,
absolutely
no,
not.
Ma'am.
No. I would have still helped him out. I would have brought him to, you know, a shelter or a vet, or probably both, and would have been like, okay, here we go. But at the end of the day, I didn't have a dog, and I don't have a dog because I don't have the capacity or space or time to provide a dog with the lifestyle that I would want to have. It's not because I don't want a dog. It's because I know I'm currently not able to provide for a dog the way I would want to.
And what would that lifestyle be like?
So it would like to be, the way, so it's tricky because I think my relationship with dogs, I would want it to be a very, like, I don't want it to be like a savory kind of thing, but I want to be like, okay, well, just like rescues kind of thing. Because I do like the idea of having a dog, but I'm not trying to like go out and get a designer dog or like, I don't want to contribute to the market of dogs.
But had Kita been a dog, you wouldn't have been contributing to that system.
Yeah, but I still was not, I was 19. I was not in a place to own, to live with a dog. See, even there. It's
yeah.
Like, and that
yeah,
is, and that's
it requires,
also, but that's also, that's also a thing that I did struggle with too, is I found for me, the way that mentally, I guess maybe because through media or just through my own experiences, my relationship and language that I had with cats versus dogs was very different, right? I would say very pets versus companion animal. So dogs is still something that I even struggle with, to like view as and language of ownership. Like I had a dog, or I have a dog, or I want a dog, as opposed to being like, I want to live with a dog. I would like to care for a dog. You know what I'm saying?
That's something like, I have to clock myself.
Because it's something I feel like dogs especially are so under that category of pets that are very much intended for human, not intended, but have been very much manipulated for human use. Yeah. Domesticated is the word, but we have, because it goes so
like,
far.
I think
we
it's also like reliant on, right? I feel like there's a certain level of independence that I don't think that I really like, not that I know this, but like I noticed it a lot more living with Kita, was because like I was used to having like a dog around, right? And like they require so much more attention and like validation, and like literally will like cry out to you if you're like not spending too much time with them.
Yeah.
Whereas like with Kita, I like kept that same energy and I was like, hey, how's it going? And Kita's like, no, I'll chill with you when I want to chill with you, kind of thing. It's a very different like energy. And so like I can understand that like it shifts the dynamic that you have as the person who is like responsible for that individual, right?
Because
you do more.
But also that does also speak to the conversation, the wider conversation we have to have, which is that distinction between animals that have been domesticated for companionship, like dogs, versus animals that have been tamed for companionship. So the difference between taming and domestication is like domestication goes for that full behavioral and that physiological switch for human like use, but it's also like a genetic predisposition for human like interaction,
which is kind of fucked.
It's mess, right? But that's how it goes. But cats do not have that. They are more within the category of tame, where there is a behavioral switch predominantly for benefits, for like access to shelter, access to food, access to things. That's not to say that your cats can't form individual relationships with you, because through research we know cats have personality. Yeah. Individuals have different like behavioral needs, and they form different relationships with the different humans that they live with. That being said, in terms of like the actual genetic and physiological shift in cats, in the service of humans, it has not been the same. Mm-hmm. You can make maybe some arguments where there are like police cats out there, and like, but I would say that the energy that is required to put in currently for cats is very different than the energy required to put in for dogs. And it speaks to where they are at in their journeys of domestication for human use. And ultimately, domestication is just a word for modification and manipulation, right?
I wonder also, it's probably because they have a way longer lifespan too. So it's like it takes longer for
cats.
Things.
To breed
certain like behaviors out. But then I feel like there were also like fewer Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's why there are more breeds of like dogs.
That's one of the requirements for domestication or to successfully domesticate a species is that they have to have a relatively short lifespan. It can't be like super long. Otherwise, like you can't get that changed behavior quick enough.
Right, right.
Because it's like otherwise, like it's going to take too long.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have to have a lot. You have to have a long enough lifespan where there's generational overlap, so learned behaviors can happen, but it can't be too long to the point where they're like, oh, this doesn't actually serve me. This doesn't actually benefit me to actually change.
Yeah.
Like physiologically to adapt to this environment with humans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like that had to happen with wolves over time because it's like. You don't live forever as a wolf. It's like, true. So it's like quick. But you
well,
still
cats live, don't either, but yeah, they live a little longer. Yeah.
That being said, it's also like, if we look at the history too of like companionship versus manipulation, right? And it's like dogs very much were manipulated for both companionship and now also for like a guidance and like services and things like that. But also predominantly for a lot of this started with agriculture and with like like protection of assets and protection of like either individuals, property, spaces,
and
exactly.
Stuff, yeah.
Right. Whereas cats, that predominant relationship, if we look back in history, has been similar, but on a much smaller scale because it's been predominantly through agriculture. It's almost essentially exclusively been through farms, and except for the past, like I would say 500 years, where then cats really started to move into like this more of a companion style form. But even still, I would say like the line of like cats living, like exiting the farm status of like being this outdoor animal that we just live with to being like this indoor like animal that we call a companion is a relatively new phenomenon. Whereas dog breeds go back like hundreds and hundreds of years. So it's just, the manipulation, the levels are not the same, right? And it's not to say that like, oh, owning a cat then makes you more morally better than those who own dogs. But I think that like knowing, for me, like having that information or even just like knowing some subtle differences is like, it awards different languages, I think, when I'm like just subconsciously when I'm talking about the two species that I'm trying to like shift.
Yeah.
But again, it's all muddled. It's all confusing because under this whole umbrella of like pets, which is not really the umbrella, it's domestication.
True.
Right. And it's like, that is a much messier conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go into like living with pets, right, we can talk about what that looks like. Cause a lot of times the conversation from vegans then turns to, well, are you vegan if you feed your dog meat or feed your cat meat, right?
Yeah. And I think that the issues with that I find it kind of confusing that people don't understand that veganism is something that you as a human being have understood and consented to and participate in, right? And it's something that you're doing to the best of your ability, given your physiology, given your abilities, how you are as a human being.
Yeah.
You've decided to move in this world in a way that causes the least amount of harm onto other animals, right?
Yeah.
Like you've made that decision. And for you, someone who can thrive on plants, right? Most of us thrive on plant-based diets.
Yeah.
It's something that is inherent to human beings. It makes sense that you would avoid animals in your diet, right? Because it's not necessary for most of us to be consuming animal products. So yeah, it's like a duh thing that you do. But then to take that and to say, well, I don't consume animals, and if I'm vegan, then the pets that I'm responsible for should also have the same diet, but they're not the same species as you.
No.
They don't like, and there are some dogs that can thrive on a plant-based diet because they're not obligate carnivores. But it depends on the breed, depends on that specific dog. It's not a hard or fast rule.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that people also are like, well, dogs can be vegan, cats can't. Cats can, but the thing is, cats can as well, technically.
Like we can talk about
can
this.
Can they?
Yeah. So there's this, like, only in 2021, like, it's because we have access to...
It's recent.
Well, not recent. It's, I think, like, vegan cat food has been available since the 2010s or something like that. The whole point of this is, like, it's just, I think you were really hitting the nail on the head where it's, like, you are the caregiver and you have made a conscious choice to enter into this decision to source where you consume and to sort, like, all your products from plants, right? And how you go about living with your moral code and your ethics, right? then to like put another being within your care in that same position when you cannot effectively communicate or ask for consent or even just communicate generally about these changes, generally about these reasons, generally about why. I think it speaks to, again, this like human-centric, very like dominating idea towards how we view animals, which is like, oh, I should just be even like, this is why it trips me when vegans do this. Cause I'm like, this is no different than people who like want to have a circus. Like you're literally coming out here being like, oh, I'm just going to determine what is your life. And I'm actually not even able to communicate with you or to make sure that this is somehow an equitable exchange. Like, there's no ways in which that you as a person, like the average everyday person, doesn't have the knowledge to equip themselves to be like, oh, I can effectively communicate with my dog non-verbally or verbally. Mm-hmm. And then even to have the hubris to assume that they would then agree or be willing or be willing or just be able to understand you. It's like there are so many layers here in which is like you can't unilaterally determine mm-hmm. how some other being is going to live their life if you yourself have no idea how that being is living their life or can communicate. Like you have no idea about the physiology, yeah. You have no idea about the communication strategy, you have no idea about the behavior, you have no idea about how the changes that would happen as a result of dietary shifts, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to go and have all these things because they align with you morally. I think it's just so selfish. And
also because the way that we have decided as human beings to source our animals or our food is for the most part unethical and unsustainable.
Yeah.
And those are realities that we have human beings, right?
Created.
Have created.
Not.
And not those animals who have been domesticated and then are now like, and you're just forcing that on them.
Yeah.
And be like, well, look, these are the parameters. Exactly.
Share the burden.
And it's like, no, actually, that doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too, I'm like, I don't think that they would have that same resistance to it if it's like their cat was just out in the streets, like, you know, caught a rat or caught a bird and ate the bird and came back, because it's like you're not then spending your money on that like animal product. I feel like a lot of vegans are like, well, I don't want to spend my money on animal products, which goes back to it being human centric, right? Like you are focused on how it makes you feel and you look as opposed to looking at how does this actually impact the individual that I'm engaging
and
in
not
relationship
only just the
with,
individual,
right?
Especially like, if we want to talk about the specific example of cat owners, because that's a really good example to bring up. This idea that, oh, well, it's just natural and my cat out and like you just have them hunt or whatever.
Oh,
and
disrupting. It's fucking,
you as someone who is probably listening to this podcast or who has friends with cats, for the most part, right, you're engaging with a cat in an urban landscape. These are heavily manipulated, heavily manufactured landscapes, right, that we have created with no animals in mind. Now we've have the situation where animals are all up in the space, we're sharing space, cool.
Yeah.
So one of the largest impacts that you as a pet owner can have to the shared space collectively for other animals is letting a supreme hunter out unsupervised without any restrictions, like that people don't recognize that it's like you caregiving for a cat is very similar to a lion. It's just like the impact that can have is not it killing humans, right? And that's why people don't clock
and
the
that's why they don't clock it exactly. I was like, gonna say, because it was like it feels like a lion to those birds, those like rodents, what have you, but because it doesn't feel that way to human beings, right? We cats don't pose that threat to us or to animals of our size. Like they're like, oh well, it doesn't matter.
No,
and it's like, oh. Interesting that it doesn't matter now, but like
still it's like people still don't even clock the waves, and that also contributes to like different forms of inequity that happen throughout urban landscapes. Like your pet doesn't exist in a vacuum when they're outside, when they're hunting. Like they are also a vector for parasite transmission, they are also a vector for disease transmission. Who are these diseases going to go and impact? Who are these diseases going to go and spread to? Which communities are these affecting? Like people don't have the range to have these conversations about, oh, what is that's the responsibility for my pet? And if I'm going to be out here being like, oh, natural diet, what does that mean in a natural, in a manufactured landscape? Is that even possible? Because the situation that they're living in, heavily manufactured to begin with, the biodiversity that they're engaging with, heavily manufactured and very fragile to begin with. So you're out here and trying to engage with all this higgy haga and being like, I have no range.
This is a really good point. Yeah, they are not responsible for the current situation. We've talked about the fact that we can't even consent or ask. We have branched on. Oh, I also like this. I want to talk briefly about this idea. Oh, that like we realized. I'm thinking about this idea that right again around this, like, it's very ego, I think, centric, right?
Yeah.
Especially when it's coming from vegans, it really blows my mind.
Yeah.
But when people are like, oh well, yeah, I have the capacity to feed my pet a vegan diet, right? Because even though, again, you may have the access to all of the nutritional supplements, the food, like the different foods that have been produced, all of these different shifts, right?
Yeah.
In how we go about caregiving for our companion animals since the Great Depression of the 1930s is when the major shift happened. So all this shift in like how we actually feed animals currently that we live with, there are ways that, yes, you could do that vegan. But for me, I just think, again, it comes down to such hubris and like ego to assume that you have the capacity to do that for another animal that you cannot communicate with. Mm-hmm. Like people don't clock. It's like you're also then signing yourself up to be a nutritionist for a species that you're not a part of. So you are literally being like, I have to be able to determine non-verbally, right, changes in behavior, changes in their physical activity, changes in their energy levels, changes in their personality and their attitude, all of these things that shift and are directly, through research, we have directly attached to diet and nutrition. We have literally directly attached, like, the gut health of your stomach is a huge indicator of your mood, which is a huge indicator of your behavior, which is an indicator of how aggressive or passive you are. All of these things are connected, right? So you're telling me that you're gonna then sign on to manage all of this when you're also out here having, I mean, in my case, I'm out here being like, I have this wayward meal here, I'm cooking this wayward meal here, maybe I plan this good meal here. It's like, I'm not a nutritionist in and of myself. I don't even know, like, I know relatively what I need, but I'm not out here being like, now let me prescribe it to other humans. So I'm not going to be like, because everyone is so specific, also, right? That's the thing,
and
right?
It's also like,
and I'm not trained in that.
Yeah, and it's like, are you honestly signing yourself up to be that perceptive and that kind of like, cued into what your companion animal is up to,
yes,
day to day, right?
Every day,
like you have exactly,
and
like
not just
our
like one and done.
Exactly,
it's, yeah.
And it's like if you're, I don't know, studying, working, doing all this bits and bobs, like you don't actually have that capacity. Most of us do not. And so it's very, yeah, it's very arrogant to assume that you can just like make the shift and you're like, yeah, it's gonna work out.
And it's gonna
when
work
you're
out
not
for them,
actually.
Yeah.
Able to ensure that if something is wrong, something is awry, your cat is like, I don't know, a little more sleepy, like eyes are a little bit droopy, maybe a different color, like,
and that's the
and gap. You don't clock
the
that.
Gauge is
like,
always
it could
when it's
be
severe.
Painful to them,
the
right?
Gauge is always when it turns
exactly,
severe.
Exactly,
that's when it's
exactly,
always, oh,
and that's because
yeah.
You know they're not communicating with us in the same way that, like,
yes.
They don't use the same languages that we do, so
also,
it's like they can't be like, hey babes, like I'm actually not feeling great, or like, you know, so it's like, yeah, it's very dangerous and it's like a very slippery slope. And it's like the way that people just like bring that topic up, like it's just like hot, like, oh yeah, like it's super doable. Like your pet can be vegan too. And
I'm
it's
like no,
I think we need to like go all the way back and like be a little bit more like a lot more cautious actually about this.
A lot
like,
more cautious. And the way people will draw lines of connectivity and thread of logic to like meet their own reason or make it make sense for them, and I'm like,
yeah.
Look, you as a person right now, as a vegan, even if you as conscious as you want to be, as proactive as you want to be in the current world that we're living in, you can't, it's not, you are not going to be 100% vegan. There's just not, it's just not going to be a thing.
No,
there's not. Even if you were to go out onto the land somewhere, guess what, you don't own the land, guess what, there's lots of there are going to be facets you are not going to be, it's not 100% is not possible.
Yeah.
We're not aiming for perfection. But what we're talking about is like, how do we do, again, I think you're very good at like talking about this, is what's practicable and what's
possible. Exactly.
Right?
Given
and
the constraints that we're working in.
We're
right?
working in. And given the history that we're working in. You're not going to go and undomesticate all of the horses in North America to then return them to their Spanish, Portuguese, and Russian lineages. No. You're not. Because guess what? We're living in a climate crisis and that would require a lot of oil, which also is, again, produced by who? Sourced from where? It's like, if we want to talk again about all these things, they're very much interconnected.
Yeah.
And you can't just throw up pets willy-nilly, especially pets, I think is like a very, people really want to be like, oh, controversial. And I'm like, it's actually not controversial. It's just a really big topic.
It's like war. Exactly. It's like war. Yeah. Or like,
yeah.
It's like history. It's like, you can't just be like, yeah. Oh, y'all, y'all, y'all. I'm like, well, what part?
And you know, the gag is, I know people are going to be listening to this episode and they're like, okay, well, is it ethical? Is it not ethical? What are they saying? Yeah.
There are a couple points they want to touch before we even give them somewhat of an answer.
Okay, for sure, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Which is because I feel as though people listening to this will also come, jump onto that board of like, well, then, following your learning, well, parents then shouldn't make their kids vegan. And I'm like, there is a huge difference.
But you actually
difference.
Can't make your kids vegan. You could feed them a plant-based diet because they're also human beings. Again, and they have the same capacity to...
Again. People that please, don't understand, please. Again, your confusion around veganism.
Yeah,
which
and a
is
plant-based,
not just about what you eat. And again, you could maybe communicate this to your children. Yeah. You can create an environment where the only things available to them are plant-based.
Yeah.
But in terms of like adopting a vegan stance on how they engage with the world is a completely different thing, right? And I think that that is something that we as humans can have, not only uniquely because we can communicate with one another, we speak the same languages, but we also are very selfish. We've done a lot of research about ourselves. We have a lot of information about how to do this, where to do this, what goes wrong, how to clock things. And guess what? The communication is a huge part of how this can be made a success. So it's very different when you're doing, when you're allegedly trying to do the same thing with an animal that you are living with or caregiving for. Because people will try and be like, throw this caregiver logic at me. And I'm like, no, it's absolutely not the same. Because you, again, can create a plant-based environment for your kid and have that be ethical. And I really don't think that you can do the same.
But also with...
For cats. Let me say cats specifically.
Yeah.
Let me say cats specifically. I think dogs are a different story. But again, I think it is...
To what extent,
it's like... We talked about all these things. It's like, I don't think a lot of people have the capacity to do this ethically or morally. And even given that this is still all wrapped up in capitalism, you yourself oftentimes aren't the soul. You aren't every element of production. You aren't sourcing the product. You aren't producing the product. You aren't then making the product. Oftentimes people who want to be like, oh, I'm going to feed my animal like a all vegan diet or whatever, or all meat diet or whatever. Like, you are not involved in that process. And if you are, it's very minimal. Like, it's either in the purchasing of the good or maybe in the preparing of it, but rarely, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, how can you so full-headedly be like, oh, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to fully switch that up when you aren't even aware of any of these processes, right? And again, we live in a capitalist system that's exploitative. So there's going to be a part of that process that's exploiting someone.
Yeah.
So guess what? It's not going to be vegan. Like, it...
Yeah, I think, like, the other thing, too, with, like, the parenting example that you brought up is that, like, as when you're, like, child-rearing, your part of it is... instilling values and like a moral compass in your children and like providing them with like those kind of like insights, or you know what I mean, because I would argue that you raise your children to be similar to you and, you know, not copycats, but whereas like when you're caring for an animal, like a companion animal, you're not sitting here teaching Kita how like
only
a moral
eat the rodents because they have a high population. Don't go after this the little European starlings. No, they're invasive. You can kill them. Like, no, you can't.
Exactly,
you can't,
you're not
teach
doing
them.
That.
You
so
like,
exactly,
you can't. Okay, that's wrong. You can train animals to do these, but you
can't inform
your
them
knowledge
exactly, and they're not going to have that understanding of like the context for it. So it's like you could probably limit the amount of time that you let them outside roaming free range, right?
Yeah.
But you're not actually having those conversations with your like companion animals. So I find that that example is just like so flawed on a lot of different levels. But I feel like that's the other thing too, that kind of frustrates me with these topics, is that like people just bring it up to say like, well, what about this? What about that? What about And I was like, child, are you not tired? Like, I just
also
don't even
let's
like
go to what about this? What about that? Let's fall.
Jay has
like,
the time.
Like,
Jay has the time. Me,
especially when it comes
no.
to animals, because I'm like, if you want to go all the way to family tree, I'm like, mama, go, give me one example of a member of this family tree before human manipulation that was choosing vegan diet, that was choosing plant based option. Give me go search the data books. I bet you can find some examples, but guess what? Are they alive? Are they still living there? No. Why? Probably because of human. So again, Mama Boots, you can't be out here being like, oh, well, this, that, and the other because pets are a controversial topic. No.
No.
Because you do not have the range.
Yeah.
Go back to Sesame Street. That is one of the best.
Controversial to whom? Controversial to whom and for why? Like, what's the... Yeah.
Yeah. And I do need to, like, I guess also remind myself to do have some compassion about this. Because I did have a friend reach out to me being like, well, I just feel as though, you know, I'm like, when I buy, like, meat products for my cat, blah, 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 I'm, like, contributing. And I'm like, at the end of the day, you are caregiving for an animal that require, like, to the best of your knowledge, what's going to be the best thing for them. And I think even, again, we brought this up briefly, but we didn't really dive into it. Like, how we currently feed pets. At least, let me just talk from a North American perspective and probably a European perspective, too. Largely shifted from due to the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, we all used to be boss natural diet, boss do, have your little concoctions, have a little potato, have a little carrot, have a little meat here, whatever. Right? Then the Great Depression happened. They were like, we can't feed ourselves. So,
obviously feed pets. Not going to be able to feed pets.
So, after the Great Depression, they were like, well, we're still, what are we going to do? Kibble, the birth of kibble, the birth of pet food. So, and pet food in and of itself isn't like this beautiful thing that's like, oh, well, it's like this natural diet. It's like, though there are a lot of pet food has carbs, which inherently, especially for obligate carnivores, turn into fat really quickly. And like, there are like, the ways in which we currently feed animals are not beneficial for animals at large, but it's like, so again, you're existing within a system that's limited, but you can still make the best decision for them without having to put extra stress on their body or put you in a position where you're going to have to jeopardize the amount of energy you actually can put into this relationship. And we all can't pretend as though caregiving is this like unlimited, beautiful thing that just replenishes you to the cows come home. Like, it requires energy and it requires effort. So if you're going to switch your caregiving nature to a point where it's going to require all of the energy that we just talked about, all of the different like ways in which you have to engage with that animal now differently, non-verbally, right? All of that energy, that's going to have a change on how you as an individual have a relationship with that animal. And it's also going to have a change on how that animal has a relationship with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, people also don't clock that. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's like, again, because you don't actually, a lot of people don't see their companion animals as like fully autonomous living individuals with like personalities.
No, like, it's like people this, like, see it akin to like pets.
Yeah,
to, like sorry, a, to like plants.
Yeah, exactly.
Plants is what I wanted
but
to
that's
say.
What like, it is. It's like a very ownership, yeah, right? It's yeah. that it's that language that we use around it. And I'm like you can't even like don't bring up pets to me if like, and I to be honest, like because to be open, it's like I'm not like this person who's like I have a cat, and the reasons I got a cat weren't rooted in beauty and like amazingness. Like, yes,
Kita is like, I'm not gonna lie, Q's cute.
Kita's cute, really right? Cute, and I did like rescue, but I also was actively looking for a cat at the time of the rescue.
Oh, yeah, so were you hunting for Kita?
No, but I do think the universe does give you what you want in weird ways. And I was like, I was on Craigslist literally looking for cats, and I was like, out and about, boom. So it's like, and that's it's magic, like, go pick this little one up, right?
Yeah.
Get him, bring him home. But it's like a lot at the time. I was this like 19-year-old, freshly. So I was like maybe what 2.5 years living on my own, like still very depressed, figuring out life, being like, oh, and it's very lonely, right? I was like living in a 2-bedroom apartment with someone who was like working all the time, and I was working like 4 jobs, so I literally saw like no one.
Yeah.
It was just like very like, and my window and my bedroom had no windows. Yeah, it was absolutely bizarre. So I was like, I didn't get a cat because I was like, ha ha ha, right? And if I'm being super honest, I went full hyperbole, full Jalen style. Okay, I had 2 zebra finches that I also fostered and cared for, and I had 4 corn snakes that I also fostered and cared for, and a betta fish that I also fostered and cared for at the same time that I was caring for Kita. Because me and my my hubris, me being like centering not only my need for an emotional connection, but also this idea that I somehow was knowledgeable enough to actually provide this is also my main defense against Noah's Ark. I was like, How in the hell are you going to tell me?
You're so mad about Noah's Ark.
I get so, I'm like, you look at every single example of humans trying to mass contain animals. Zoos, circuses. Oh, failure. Every single time. There could be some good stories, but no. And you're going to tell me you try and did this with no cages, with no restriction, with no enrichments, with no, you all were on a boat for how many? 40 days, 40 nights. This is, but again, I have to realize it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. Yeah. It's supposed to teach you that floods come and
go.
I don't know what the flood is supposed to teach you. I do know what it's supposed to teach you. I disagree with that.
So,
anyway, that was a huge random Rudy, but I feel like we have really hit all the points about Let's go.
Yeah, I'm just gonna. So I had like two questions on TikTok that people had asked me.
Okay.
One was, how do you feel about the idea of having pets? Not necessarily from store pets, because that's obviously bad, but just the idea of quote unquote owning them. So I feel like we've touched upon ownership,
rescuing,
and the difference between like caring for another individual and owning that individual.
Right. And I think something we didn't touch on,
and we were like working on
was that. How do you tell the difference? Well, there are people who go out and like, people who like go out and make their animals do tricks and things like that. Yeah. I'm like, this is not really, I'm like, for me, again, it's not that, it doesn't speak to the type of relationship I want to have with Kida, right? Yeah. Like with the animal that I'm living with. I don't want to associate, right, like enrichment with performance.
Yeah,
like
performance for other human beings, right? It's not like rather them amongst their other like dog friends, like playing and like entertaining one another. Because that's like, whatever, do what you gotta do.
Here, have all the treats.
But it shouldn't be up to me to be like, hey, if I clap twice and you do a little trick for me.
And it's always the most specific trainings too, right? Yeah. And it's like, and that's again why with dogs too, I always have a struggle with like shifting my language, because it's so ingrained in me, this idea of like, how that relationship should be. It's very manipulative.
How do you feel about like, so I feel like in certain cases, like maybe for them to like sit down could be helpful. Like if they're like in a bag.
Where do we draw the line?
Because I'm like, I would do that with like, not that Corey really listened much, but like sometimes you'd like sit down and be like, okay, great. Like I'll give you a treat. But it was never like, roll around, give me your paw, da da da.
Because I feel like those aren't. Yeah. I think it's like, when it comes to like cohabitating space together, like for example, Kida, I like don't need on my neck, which is something you used to love to do as a kid.
Yeah,
with the claws. I'm sorry, I can't have your claws in my trachea. That's not a relationship that's gonna work. So when that happens, I'm gonna adjust the behavior and keep it pushing, right?
Yeah,
and it's like you can adjust animal behavior so that cohabitation is more fruitful for both of you, and that could be things like, you know, sitting, that could be one example. It could be things like maybe minding the material goods that you share space for. If you
please don't scratch the couch.
Certain things like that, right? But I think it comes down to also how we then go about adjusting these behaviors, right? Because oftentimes a lot of people go at it from like a negative reinforcement approach or like an enrichment approach. And to be honest, I don't really agree with either. Like a treat approach, like to condition some, like an animal to consider like a treat is happening, and then to remove that and then to expect the behavior, I think it's like trickery for me. But also like negative reinforcement is also just wrong for me. So it's like, but I'm also not the one with all the answers. Like I don't know how Kida perceives me taking his paws and moving them off my neck. Does he perceive that as something negative? Is that scary for him? Like I can only do it to the extent of like how I understand cat behavior, right?
Yeah.
Which again is very limited, because as humans, we've only recently been studying animal behavior collectively. Yeah. So it's like all these little things that I'm just like,
Yeah. And I was also just thinking about like the the couch scratching like example.
Yeah.
Of like,
that I don't do with Kida, because I'm like, that's a natural behavior and I don't.
The other thing too is like, if you're going to remove that, then maybe you can provide your cat with another kind of like scratching opportunity, right? Because you're like, okay, look, bet you want to do this thing, but like I don't want you to do it here, so like I'm going to provide you with another environment
and
that you
work
can do
with
this
them
in.
To get used to that new thing, right?
Exactly.
Because it's like, so often people will be like, oh, I bought, myself included, bought like a cat scratcher poke.
Didn't work.
It's like, yeah, because I also didn't spend any time like getting him interested in it, or getting him to like it, or getting him curious about it, because it's like he saw this thing that he's never seen before.
Yeah,
obviously didn't inherently know what to do with it.
Yeah,
because no one's out here teaching him how to do with it.
And it could, I was literally gonna say the same thing. I'm like, because he's like also familiar to this one couch that he's like seen for I don't know how much time has been eyeing it. It's probably bigger too. And then you're going to bring me this like raggedy aggy little like, you know, like it's like, maybe I don't want that, you know? But yeah, I feel that. Yeah,
there's so many parts of this conversation I really feel like we could extend, because there's so, people love to bring up pets and veganism as if it's like the end of the world, honestly. They really bring it up as though, like, if I have a pet, I can't be vegan. Or if I'm...
I think that that's a really convenient thing to do, though. Because you know that, okay, worst case, even if that were true, then why wouldn't you adopt a completely plant-based diet and then just call yourself someone who's not vegan? You're not going to actually do that. You're going to use this, like, oh, well, if I have a pet, then I can't be vegan. And I'm going to catch you at the charcuterie board eating cheese, ham, and salami and all that jazz, because you're like, well, can't be vegan because I have a pet. You know what I mean? It's, like, it's very much just like a slippery slope, because I'm like, you in your heart know that you could be doing more. Yeah. And you also, like, if you, you think about it, you know that they're exactly, you know that they're not mutually exclusive. People like, love please. To play games
like that. They're like, well, I have to feed my dog steak. Okay. If your dog eats steak, if that's the life that you have set up for your dog, I'm not going to go and ask you to go and switch that unless you have the time and the ability to do that, not only safely, but in my opinion, like slowly, so that it's a nice experience for the dog. Right. Yeah. Because we all know swift change doesn't really, and especially swift change when you don't understand what's going on is very scary, which is always the situation for pets because they cannot communicate with you effectively. Yeah. So it's just like, again,
but that's the other thing too, the communication piece. People are like, well, they can communicate.
I know
with
what
us.
They're doing. I'm like, no, exactly. You don't. Like, I promise you.
You're
don't.
Very limited. Very, very limited.
And it's, just, and it's really, again, because again, I don't know a lot about dogs so much. I live with a cat. So the more my research has been like cat behavior, cat history, development, da 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 da. But what the bits I have learned about dogs, I'm like, there's a lot of misinformation around dogs that y'all think is like cute, you little, oh, my dog's a dude, cute, I understand this. No, y'all are literally misreading the text. Like, your dog is sending you SOS and you said, oh my God, they said sorry. Like,
did you see that TikTok video?
I don't know.
There was this one TikTok video where it's like, it was like this large dog that was like cohabitating with a family that recently had kids, and they had the like the baby on the dog's like neck, like like pulling the ears, and the dog like his eyes were like super huge. But you know how like they always give off this like air that we human beings read it as nice, playful, kind, but there was something about it where I'm like, I highly, highly doubt that you are comfortable having this like mini baby or person on your neck pulling at your ears in a way that, and you have also been conditioned that you cannot express this, you outwardly own, so you that can, you exactly that you're like, you can't just jump up because you know that you're going to get reprimanded as fuck, and you have not been, you've been conditioned into
not being docility. Able to have boundaries, which is again so which is why I think so many people have dogs as opposed to having cats, because cats enforce their boundaries with you, whereas dogs literally get conditioned out of communicating your boundaries, right? And it's like to a point where it is to their own detriment.
Yeah.
And then you hear about these stories where maybe a dog snaps, or maybe a dog where this happens, or maybe and a dog like runs away,
time,
and you're like, well,
you know
why?
What
happened?
Exactly.
It's like, I'm never trying to blame any individuals. Like, living with a non-human is not, I would not say it's a walk in the park. And so I think that people definitely need
but
to
it's
also
an experience
that
a lot of
that.
People
like,
glamorize,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And see it as this like
this
status thing too. Like, and it's like, maybe that's that, I think that's on you, right? To
it's
like
a lot,
to not consider it that way, because then it's like you're also not ensuring that you're providing this animal with the best care possible, right? That centers that animal. Like, so many people like get dogs, and then after a few years they like get children, and then it's like this whole thing where I don't think you actually considered when you got
what's
this
like? Yeah.
When you like got this animal, that what would that be like in a few years once you introduce other living beings that are human, smaller, like how I don't, maybe, you know, maybe there are like people who are out here like really doing the work and like spending the time doing it. But like, I don't know. I like went through like a little bit of a like rabbit hole with that video, because I was like, oh my gosh, like this looks really bad. And then there was like a dog trainer like sharing all of these other videos about like how dogs are engaging with like children and like just like companion animals generally, because it's like, and it's kind of scary when you think of it, because I'm like, that animal it's could scary. Lash out yeah, at any point, point because you don't know how much they've been through in their life, yep. how much they've have to like suppress things. Like you don't even know what that day ticked them off. They're like, you know what? You fed me like fucking half an hour later than you usually do. And I really can't. I like, you know, I'm already doing all of these fucking parameters. Yeah. And now you're going to throw a baby on my neck. Like, fuck you. You know what I'm saying? And like, I can understand that, but then the result is going to be, let's put this dog down. And they're
just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, people don't recognize that like, just because your animal is conditioned out of communicating with you, their boundaries, doesn't mean that they don't have them or that you shouldn't try to respect them or that you
should try to figure something like, out. Like, because then the response too is to like all of these animals that do lash out in the end, whether they're in captivity or in zoos or whatever, it's like, let's put them down.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Or let's give them up. Or let's, let's put them in
time to go to the pound. Or gotta get rehomed.
Again, it's
and it's like, well, you didn't actually home them in a place that they could stay for the rest of their lives. Like, you weren't actually considering them.
Beneficial to them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, again, in the long term,
this, like, all of the things that we bring up really highlight that, like, living with a pet, living with an animal within your home, if that's what we're gonna, like, be pet, sure. Yeah. Within your home is a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
Like a huge responsibility. And it's, for me, it's like, I definitely didn't consider this before I started living with Keto. So is moving forward, am I going to like have another, or am I going to live with another? I see even the language popping out again. Am I going to live with another animal? Well, I think it really depends. Situationally, I think that like, it depends on where how I feel, how my understanding of pets of animals still like I'm still learning, I'm still growing, like I'm like, this is what I'm dedicating my life to, is animal behavior.
But so what
like,
if Keto wants a brother or a sister?
Yes, in an ideal world, like it's like, but it also comes down to like my finances, like there's a lot of things that I'm going to be more conscious of at the time than when I initially got Keto, because the amount of times that I was in a situation where I was like, oh my gosh, okay, we'll have to buy Keto's food, and I'm also hungry, and I like don't have enough money, and it was like, there are things that I wouldn't ever change that, because I'm like, okay, like learned and
live and learn,
but it's not like, I'm not trying to encourage people to put themselves in, because oftentimes people wouldn't make that decision, right? If you are in a financially like unstable situation, oftentimes people do be like, well, oh, okay, maybe you can go without eating for one meal or something like that, or like I can and you can, like there's the compromises you start to make as a result of your situation become easier and easier, and I don't think that's necessarily something that's fair to put an animal through unless you are conscious of how those situations are going to change or how like you can improve them or things like that. Like I feel so many people just go into companion living without realizing the responsibility of it, right? And I mean myself included, but I think it just goes to show that like we socially have been very much conditioned. I think this is in and of itself an umbrella of like being conditioned to consider animals as separate than or other than, right? And it's also really weird that we like are so confident around pets and like companion animals, when we have so many examples of the failures with domesticated animals, right? Of like what this is looking like outside of the home, of how hard it is to care for an animal outside of the home, let alone when you bring them in. So it's like when you are trying to do it in their natural habitat or in their environment or in a place where it's easier for them to be enriched, it's still difficult. Like we have so many examples of that.
Yeah. Well, because at the end of the day, like we naturally, we're not meant to be the providers of other like species. Like with the way that they are domesticated currently, it kind of lends itself to, like we are in a position where we do have to care for, you know, cats or dogs or what have you, because they're domesticated to a point where they can't really like fight for themselves in the wild and stuff like that. But it kind of like brings home for me where I'm like, this whole practice, right, is kind of against nature in a lot of ways, but then the same time, those are the parameters that we're working with, right?
And it's so, actually,
and you have to work with it decisions, exactly.
Kill them all, cover them all, ship them all. Yeah. I'm like, you can't be making these decisions that are so
So you just got to do
void of nuance, right? I'm like, no, right? Because if we really start to clock the ways,
it's
in which a human alteration of animals specifically, not for consumption, like outside of diet, right, has really impacted the entire world and ecosystems, you really need to close. Like, we're talking...
That's
like,
a lot. Today's Caucasity segment. I have two examples. So, Jay, are you sure you don't have any? No. I mean, fine if you don't, but...
I know, I'm like looking at my...
Okay, so the first... what should I do as the first one? Okay, so I'll do the first one. So the first one was a case of... So there's this, like, social media, I guess, like, branding page, and they tweeted, or, like, they created this post about reproductive rights in light of the bill that was passed in Texas about banning abortions past 6 weeks. So I'm just going to find the actual post. I'm pretty sure I took screenshots, but okay. So it was basically my body, my choice. And then the tweet read, if men were the ones to get pregnant, abortions would be free, happen in a drive-thru, and they would get a reward afterwards. And then the caption is, yes, I said what I said. Oh, so now they changed it. Babes. Oh, wow. The tea. So they actually have... Oh, child. Okay, I'm just living this with y'all right now. So at first,
they changed
the caption after I called them out. But in the call out, they refused to acknowledge it. So...
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Okay, good thing I took screenshots. So in the original caption, they said, yes, I said what I said. If men were the ones to get pregnant, abortions would be free, happen in drive-thru, and they would get a reward afterwards. And then they're like, P.S., you can't be anti-abortion and also understand others may not be as lucky as you if you have to have a choice, whatever. And then I, like, called them out in the comment section, which I'm also just like, did you delete my comments? That's my other question now because I'm going back to the post. And let's see. I'm not seeing it, actually. Well, okay, no, it's here. So I was like, love the intent behind this. It's important to remember that any gender can have an abortion. So it's key to use gender neutral language when engaging in these conversations. And I said credits to Erica Hart because they have like this tweet that like went viral and they were like, gender can have an abortion. And so then they're like, yes, I agree. That's why I didn't use any gender except from calling out the man making the rules to control people with uteruses, which I'm like, you didn't actually say people with uteruses at all. You framed this as a women's only issue. And so I said many trans men can get pregnant. So gendered language like this misses the mark. And then she goes, I see what you mean. If I said cisgender men, though, the exact pro-life people and actual cisgender men wouldn't understand what that means, which I'm also just like, it's also your responsibility in those instances, right? If your audience doesn't know this term and you yourself are a cisgendered, cishet woman, it could be a great thing for you to take that on, right? To employ language that does not perpetuate cisnormativity, right? That does disrupt that discourse. Like, of all people, like, it's your responsibility to do that. So I'm like, you miss an opportunity here. And then she goes, sorry if my message misses the mark for you. I do my best, but being called out when we try is what makes most people be silent. And that to me is a bigger loss than maybe not a perfect message, which I'm also just like, how did you manage to victimize yourself in this instance where I'm coming to you in like all good faith, love your content. I'm here to, like, I see something, I'm like, maybe you could value like having this insight, right? And then I answered back and I was like, I only bothered to hold you accountable for using gender language because I love your content and assumed you would take it into consideration moving forward. I see that that's not your intention. So I'll see myself out. Have a good rest of your day. And someone else also called them out and was like, the other thing too that I didn't really appreciate was that they're like liking TERF comments. So like, so trans exclusionary, like radical feminist. And so this other person in the comment section was like, I guess it offends people that women are a thing. And I'm like, you should really not be endorsing that behavior. Like, that's something that, like, I guess I'm asking for too much on behalf of like other people, but like, yeah, that to me was just very wishy-washy. But the fact that they now changed the caption and did not take, and
that's,
I have, that's a gag, and I took screenshots of it, right? I'm gonna add them, actually. I made a post about it. I'm not gonna post it yet. I'm just like prepping the content for it. But in the original screenshot, you can see that they used men And now they change it to cis men, which I'm also just like, why wouldn't you then be like, oh, thanks for bringing that up. I will address this, or I will. And even then, like, yeah, I don't know. Just like the conversation about reproductive rights, it should not just be reduced to this is an issue that is affecting women and that men are in charge of perpetuating, because that's not actually the reality. And I think that when you look at it in such a simplistic form, you miss the nuance, right? The intersection, the people that are going to be disproportionately affected by these regulations, right? It's not going to be cishet white women, right? It could be, but for the most part, it's going to affect more so disenfranchised people of color, people who don't actually have the means to travel out of state to get an abortion if that's what they need to get. Like, so
yeah,
that to me was very much like it. I just hate accounts really that make that shit. Like, I'm just like, why are you fueling this false narrative, right? And it actually takes nothing away to acknowledge that any person can have an abortion. It actually doesn't. It just allows, exactly, it affirms the identity of lots of people, and then provides people who, I don't know, like the reproductive kind of like health, I guess like industry or what have you, is overwhelming even if you are like a cis person. And I just don't understand how, it's why people are so insistent on perpetuating what to me is, it's looking like TERF. It's looking like trans exclusionary radical feminism. Like, it's really that, because why are you fighting? Why is it arms up in air? Like, oh, it really hurts that people like me who are trying are now getting silenced. Like, nigga, what are you talking about? Literally, what are you talking about? I literally said, I appreciate the intention here. I just think it's important that we might want to use some gender neutral language here.
Yeah.
That's literally all I said. And it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's not perfect. No one is striving for perfection. Do I look like a fucking perfect person to you? I'm not. Like, I just don't understand how, like, white women, especially whenever they are called out, it's like, well, what was me? I was trying. Now what am I supposed to do? Not try? And then what you're going to do is what? Update your caption and not give credit to the person who encouraged you to do that and leave my comment buried in the fucking comment section? Like, fuck you. Like, literally, fuck you. Like, oh, it's so freaking annoying. And I'm like, I'm not going to, like, you know, at their account here, but you'll definitely see the post on Instagram and like do what you will with that. But just, yeah, it's just frustrating, honestly. Like, and I also think that the problem to me too is that, like, when I see shit like that, I'm trying to be more vocal about denouncing that. Like, I know that my page is about veganism and I try to make it, you know, about veganism, but I'm about, you know, the liberation of all people. I'm about like anti-oppression in all realms. And I fervently do not believe that you can be vegan and uphold any other system of oppression. And as a cis kind of sort of person, if I see cis normativity being perpetuated or transphobia happening, like, I'm going to take the time and like call it out, because that's our responsibility, right? And I feel like a lot, and you can see this when it comes to like really any issue, right? It's like, people love to have BLM this in their bio and say like, we're allies, we're this, we're that. But when you actually see your racist peers or cousins spewing anti-Black rhetoric, you're like, ooh, well, I didn't actually feel safe in that space. Like, I didn't really feel like calling it out. Like, it just feels very performative to me. And the fact that I was one of the only people in that comment section to bring that up to this person's attention. And I know that there were hundreds of cis people who saw that post, engaged with it, liked it, shared it. It makes me feel a type of way, because I'm like, y'all, we need to be doing, there needs to be more of us doing this. And like, it just, the urgency, the energy, it's just like not what I like it to be. And the fact that when people are held accountable, they have just such a like, oh, yeah, really bothers me. So that's like my first example of caucasity. And sorry, that was a mouthful, y'all. I'm just gonna like, whew, breathe, you know, in and out, you know what to do. Okay, so my second one has to do with veganism, also still on Instagram, platform of choice, I guess. So there was this non-Black person. Did you? I think I told you about this. They shared a post about what is white veganism, right? Oh my God. This very cute infographic, just out here.
Caucasity actually after this.
Okay, great. Good. So I'm saying Caucasity, even though this person is not a Caucasian person. You can embody whiteness and move as a white person, even if you are not a white person, right? So this is why it's being included here. So they made this post on Instagram. One of my mutuals sent it to me. I don't want to out them because I didn't ask for consent, but like, yeah. So they sent me this post and they're like, have you seen this? And I'm like, I haven't, but it's looking very similar to what a lot of us have done, like a lot of us Black, vegan, femme, and women. So there's this post and it's like, what is white veganism and why is it problematic? And literally, I could tell that there was some of the same text that Rain from Afro-Liberated Taste has created. So she has like a few infographics about white veganism. And she does like a very, very good job at doing this. Even like her reels especially are some of my favorites. But yeah, I could recognize some of the text. It was like verbatim, y'all. It wasn't just like, oh, I was inspired by this. And the other thing too is like, if you're inspired, you got a credit. This person goes ahead, literally copy paste what a lot of us Black vegans have been saying and doesn't credit a single Black vegan. There was not a single Black vegan that was tagged in that post, but guess who was tagged?
I'm not surprised, though.
Guess who was tagged? Non-Black POC vegans, right? And POC vegan, y'all know I don't really fuck with the term POC, so I don't use it properly in sentences, but essentially vegans, like non-white vegans, right? And they were all like Latinx or brown or what have you. And there were people that were listed there. First of all, the tags were like right in the corner, so you couldn't actually see it unless you really dug into the post, which for me, in terms of transparency, doesn't really work. If you're tagging someone and giving them credit, you want it to be visible. It's not something that you're hiding from people. You want it to be known. Hey, this is where I got this information from. You go on the tag and then all of the people, there are a few people like love them and mutuals with them, but like not consistently talking about white veganism. Literally made one post months ago that made rounds on the internet because we all know any like non-Black person talks about anything is like, oh, let's go. Like, y'all eat it up. But I thought it was very, very questionable that there was not one Black person that was mentioned there in a list of what, 8 people. And then they go on in the caption to be like, tag your favorite BIPOC creators. Nigga, don't say BIPOC if there's not a Black person in sight. It's IPOC.
Or Indigenous.
It's IPOC. Or Indigenous, actually, for that matter. POC. It's just POC. And, say what it is.
What are you saying? What is the color?
And I'm like, how does your anti-Blackness, even in this instance, inform how you're... Like, you can't talk about white veganism. You can't denounce white supremacy whilst perpetuating anti-Blackness. Like, that just does not make sense to me. Like, and then a few of us, like, held them accountable and were like, hey, hello, hello. EA, even in the comment section, was like, hey, love this. Because at first, she didn't, like, actually look into, like, the tags and stuff. And then she's like, weird that, like, we're not tagged. And then she's like, oh, I'm working on it. Hours later, no change. And guess what? Deleted the post. Deleted the motherfucking post. No. And I was like, babes. And the other thing, too, that bothered me with that, again, is that a lot of you are bystanders to this, right? You see these posts, you like them, you hype them up, and there's no amount of critical thinking in you that's like, let me think about white veganism, right? Let me think about this as a concept. Let me think about who I learned from, right? Let me think about the other creators I know who have been making this. Huh, it's strange that there was not a single Black person tagged here. Maybe let me ask them to hold them accountable for that. Let me say nothing. And so then again, we have to go out and be like, hey, you didn't tag us, you didn't credit us. Yeah. And then it causes a whole thing. And now we're seen as these angry Black women, rah, rah, rah. And it's like, yeah, so it's like a lot of you want to be allies, but it's like you're not actually doing the work to be allies. And it's like, it's very frustrating for me because I'm like, we're just watching this unfold. And it's like, yeah. I'm like, I didn't really want to say anything. And it's like, you should, like, anyway.
But it's also, whole like bystander-ish shit is not cute. And it's at this point, for me, I have no, I'm just getting so much more, I guess, aggressive with my reads.
Yeah.
So my caucasity is not even really caucasity. It's kind of connected to just, like, anti-blackness perpetuated by black men and then reinforced by white men. So this is all in response to what's happening right now with the announcement of Lil Nas X's album.
Yeah.
So Lil Nas X, who, and for all intents and purposes, is like the leading music artist who is also queer and black and openly, like, accessible about this.
Yeah.
Parts of his identity. So he's releasing this album. How do you have wayward members of the hip hop community and then wayward white boys out here on Twitter being like retweeting all this stuff where it's like, oh, there's no hidden agenda, but there's only women and white people on his track. There's no black artists. Oh, da da. And I'm like, the ways in which your people will just flagrantly display their misogynoir. I'm like, Megan Thee Stallion is on this album. Doja Cat is on this album. So, like, who do you see as black? Is it only black men? And, like, then again, why are you allowing other wayward white people to retweet this stuff and have a little conversation with themselves? Have this conversation within our own community, because yo, what? Where it, like, this energy, this whole, oh, ha, 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 hee, hee, and people just standing on the sides, and this is, like, some cute little thing happening. I'm like, this is actually incredibly frustrating, because not only is he young as fuck, but is so exposed and literally leading the way for generations after him to come up feeling not only safer, but empowered to also create in the same space and in similar ways. Literally pioneer, like, maybe pioneering is actually not the word, colonial, so we'll take it out.
Yeah.
But, like, doing so much at such a young age, so exposed, and to have so many wayward people who have no idea about his experience or have no idea just about intercommunity drama that has been not only a remnant, a legacy of white supremacy, specifically, like, religious supremacy, and how that has informed homophobia throughout history within the black community. Well, not throughout history, but the history started around 500 years ago here in North America. So anyway, the gag-a-roni of this all is that this is happening online, and I'm just seeing this wayward white man retweet being like, yeah, exactly. This is the gay agenda, and there is also, like, I can't believe you didn't have any of, like, these amazing black rappers on here. And I was like, there are black rappers on here. They just have pussies, and you are misogynoiristic. And an asshole. And so I went onto the comment. I normally stay clear of Twitter because it's too much for me. Yeah. I'm like, I could be there all day.
Yeah.
And so I went into comments. I was like, this is how I know. This is a prime example how I know that none of your ancestors are either good people or care about you. Because none of them had the ability, the energy, the time, or the consideration to see you typing this wayward ass message and guide you somewhere else. Guide your fingers to another word. Guide your fingers to not retweet. No, nothing. Every single member of your lineage endorsed this. And this is how I know that you rotted. Absolutely. Just got, I was like, mm-mm. I said it a little bit better than this, and in fewer words, obviously, for Twitter. But I was just like, the fact that not a single member of your whole lineage was able to guide you towards a better decision, you are lost. Like, it's just, oof. Anyway, yeah, so that really upset me. But I love that he just, like, is just joking with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's, like, have you heard about the whole thing, the whole gag? So, Lil Nas came out with a song, Call Me By Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out with the song with Industry Baby. Then he started to have incredibly public beef with DaBaby. And there is... Then Lil Nas has recently been posting the, like, lyrics to the songs with like all the correct like punctuations and everything, and it's like both Industry Baby and potentially Call Me By Your Name were about DaBaby.
Oh
yeah, because it's like champagne drinking with your friends, you live in a dark boy, I cannot pretend. And then it's like, yeah, I'm not fazed, don't need you to send, if you live in even in your garden, you know that you can call me when you want, call me when you need. And he allegedly talks about this trip that they took to Hawaii, which is in the lyrics. And then he's like, what the fuck? And then, so this is why I started all this fucking public beef. That's why he went into his concert. And he's like, if you ain't got HIV or AIDS, put your lighters up. And then that started the whole, like, big thing. That's why he got dropped from his, like, endorsements. Because he, like, came out with this huge, like, homophobic, like, anti-HIV thing.
What?
Yeah. This.
Oh, so, oh, so he's just, like, not out. And then.
Closeted. Which is, this is what the theory is going around.
I kind of hate that, because then that also, yeah, like, perpetuates that like, narrative that, like, the most homophobic people are actually, like, secretly gay, which I feel like is,
it's
like,
not
really
true.
Harmful,
yeah,
and
it
not
is
true.
A harmful narrative, because...
But I'm also just like, DaBaby, like...
But it's just, like, a gag. And then also, it's just, like, in the same week, Laverna, like, did, like, this, like, low-key drop and, like, on, like, the red carpet being like, oh, I've been with Benny. Like, she just literally was like, name someone in the rap industry, like... I was like, I am not surprised there.
No.
But I'm also just like, these are conversations that we can have without white people.
Yeah. They know, they just don't know how to act. It's frustrating.
It's just so frustrating, because I'm just like, the shit that has come out of this is so wild. Like, the rappers that have, like, now, like, doubled down and be like, well, what about the kids who are just trying to be straight and, like, da-da-da, like, being, like, Lil Nas is, like, a fat influence. It's like, it's becoming this whole thing. And I'm just like, ugh.
I feel like you lose
this
brain
is
cells.
It's fucking exhausting.
Like,
yeah.
That rhetoric. Like.
It is. Oh, shit. Okay. I have to go to the meeting.
Have a good meeting.
Bye. Thanks for listening.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Goats and Oats. My name is Apora, and you can support the podcast financially by subscribing to either of our Patreons. Mine is Apora the Vegan.
And my name is Jay, and you can support my Patreon over at patreon.com/jauntingjay.
You can also support the podcast by donating to our GoFundMe link, which can be found in our Instagram bio at Goats and Oats Podcast. As always, don't forget to rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to it.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.